Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscawen. Groupon started dealing on the NASDAQ today. Late yesterday, the company valued its stock at $20 a share. They are now trading at $28, and we might get an update on that in just a few seconds. Launched only 3 years ago, the deal of the day discounter serves more than 150 markets in North America and 100 markets in Europe, Asia, and South America, and has amassed 35 million registered users. In recent history, Groupon hit some financial troubles and has come under increasing scrutiny. It has received fierce criticism from users and business clients. It's even been called a sham and a disaster. But today's strong opening seems to fly in the face of all that. On today's show, we'll take an in-depth look at Groupon, what it does, and where it will go. Our guests are Rolf Winkler and Nicholas Carlson. Winkler writes the Heard on the Street column for the Wall Street Journal, and Nicholas Carlson is the Deputy Editor for Business Insider and has just published an in-depth investigative report on the company. Rolf and Nicholas, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And if you want to join the conversation and share your experiences with Groupon, whether you're a customer, a business owner, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. And Rolf, let's start with you. What do you make of today's pretty strong opening? Rolf, are you there? All right, let's start with Nicholas. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Is this Rolf or Nicholas?
It's Nicholas. Hi.
Hi, Nicholas. We'll get Rolf on the line in 1 second. So, Nicholas, what's your reaction to this stock price?
Well, these things are pretty well choreographed. You know, it would be sort of a disaster if it wasn't sort of a great open like this. They sort of choreograph it as you get to the IPO. They start to say, here's where, you know, you start to see leaks in the press, and it says, here's where we're going to price it. And then, oh, the demand is so great, we're going to have to price it a little bit higher. And then you start to see that then it pops, and then you tend to get a pop like you're seeing today. If you didn't, it would be more of a surprise than seeing it, what it's doing right now in the market.
And when do you think we'll see the real story emerge, or will we, or is this it?
No, I think what's going to happen is over the next quarter or two, you're going to see this thing settle into more of a realistic price. When LinkedIn, which is also another one of these hot web companies, when it IPO'd earlier this year, its stock price shot up, up into, I think like $125 or more, and which was tremendous. And it's settled back today to around $75 a share, which is still very high, much higher than where it IPO'd, but it came back to earth. And so what happens is you see, give it a couple quarters and see what happens.
And Rolf Winkler, are you with us now?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great.
Rolf Winkler writes the Heard on the Street column for the Wall Street Journal. And Rolf, what's your reaction to today's opening? Nothing surprising there for you?
No, and in fact, I think one factor, I'd say it's hard to draw any firm conclusions from today's opening price, because one factor people have to remember here is that the number of shares that Groupon actually sold as part of this offering was highly limited. And here's an interesting statistic for you. Dating back to 1995, right, so including the dot-com bubble, Groupon, the number of shares of Groupon's total outstanding shares that were actually sold as part of this initial public offering was 6.4%, right? That's the number of shares that are actually trading based as a percentage of total outstanding. Dating back to 1995, only three companies had fewer shares as a percentage of their outstanding trade. In other words, in order to kind of manufacture a high price, they're limiting the amount of supply available, if that makes sense. So you limit the supply of shares, and so, you know, there's not as much supply to meet demand, really. And what's interesting is that LinkedIn did the same thing. Pandora Media, the online radio company, you guys probably know them well, did the same thing. But they didn't limit it quite this much. They were about 9%. This one's 6%, which is remarkably low, which just speaks to the kind of acrobatics, the corporate finance acrobatics they had to go through to get this thing through the door.
So that seems like it's a move to come up with a strong price in the beginning. What kind of trouble does that potentially get you into later?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is, so for the moment, the limited supply of shares can prop up the price. In 6 months, when right now there's a lockup period that prevents insiders from selling, but that expires in 6 months. So right now you have a big overhang of shares. Will the insiders hold on after that lockup period expires, or will they say, hey, let's say this right now it's worth about $18 billion, this company. If it's still worth that in 6 months, are they going to race to lock in their gains? It's an interesting question to ask, especially today, because, again, LinkedIn, a piece of news we saw yesterday was that their lockup period is expiring in a week, or maybe 2 weeks, but they filed to sell additional shares, right? Shareholders that didn't sell on the offering are now going to sell. So, of course, even though they actually reported great earnings last night, the stock is down 10% today.
And, Ralph, where is Groupon valued now?
About the market capitalization is about $18 billion. And that is, you know, in terms of, is that the right price for this thing? I mean, their revenue this year is, or I should say maybe next year, is probably going to be on the order of $2 to $2.5 billion. And so far they're not profitable. So you're paying, you know, 8 to 9 times revenue for a company that doesn't generate any profits, which is... You know, it's a tricky proposition for investors who are, you know, like to buy things at a good value.
And Nicholas Carlson from the Business Insider, you just had a point. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, sorry to interrupt like that, but I was going to say the profits aren't really there yet, and meanwhile, Groupon's going through this transition where they are trying to sort of get to profitability, but the way they're doing that is to cut back on their marketing spending, and so it looks like they're going to spend another quarter or two, or more doing that, and when that happens, their growth is going to also stop in terms of just revenues, not even profitability. And so this is a company that, you know, when these things IPO, they need to look like they are big growth stories. But if for the next few quarters, if it doesn't look like it's growing very much, it's going to, you know, might take a beating in terms of the stock price.
And Go ahead, Ralph.
I was going to say, and Nick raises the perfect point, and what you saw actually in their third quarter results, Groupon, you could see already that growth is slowing. They cut back on marketing in a big way in order to get closer to profitability, to try and convince markets that, yes, they can be profitable. But growth pretty much hit a wall for these folks. I mean, for a company that had been growing kind of hand over fist just from one quarter to the next, from the second quarter to the third quarter, they only grew about 10%. Now, that's pretty good for most run-of-the-mill companies, but for a company that wants such a steep valuation, again, relative to no profits, when that growth is slowing, it really calls into question what people are paying for it.
And Ralph, I'm wondering if we can try to explain some of what's unique to Groupon and their business model and also their accounting in some very simple language, because we're talking about money spent on marketing. So basically, when a customer buys a deal from Groupon, so I pay my $40 for the meal, that $40 goes to Groupon, right? And then they take some time to pay the merchant, correct? And meanwhile, that money has a second life, so to speak.
Yes, and actually there's some devil in those details, which are fascinating. But yes, fundamentally what you're doing when you buy Groupon, so Groupon sends out emails to people who are interested in deals. So for instance, you can get, here's for $20, we'll give you a coupon for $40 to a restaurant, right? So you save 50% and pay me $20 today, right? Groupon will then roughly split that revenue down the middle. It'll keep half and it'll give $10 to the restaurant. Now, what's interesting there is that Groupon doesn't actually give the restaurant its $10 right away. It keeps the money, right, over a period of 60 days. In the interim, it uses that money to fund marketing, its marketing expense, which brings in new users who buy new deals, who grow the business, right? Now, the problem with that, ultimately, it works great while the company is growing, while money is coming in faster than it's going out, right? But eventually, when the growth slows down and money is kind of coming in at the same rate that it needs to go out, well, then it can't use the money that it owes merchants to fund marketing,
and
if that makes sense.
That
again, slows growth.
And Nicholas Carlson, is that where the accusation of, I've seen the term Ponzi scheme thrown around a lot, is that where that comes from?
That's where it comes in. I mean, that's where people start to talk about it. It's, you know, you pay out old investors, you know, how a Ponzi scheme works is you pay out old investors with new investors' money. So in this way, Groupon is sort of selling new Groupons and paying old bills. So it is dependent on growth. I mean, it does look like they're going to... There is this race to find out if they can cut back marketing expenses enough and sort of depend on their current subscribers enough to sort of maintain profitability and sort of grow. So that's the big challenge that Groupon faces in the coming quarters.
And Ralph Winkler, we've already hit a bit on some of the potential weaknesses of Groupon. Where do you see the company's strengths?
Well, the strengths, by the way, when we say Ponzi, I think I would say that it's probably not a Ponzi, that's probably, you know, some of its worst critics will say that it's probably unfair in the long run. And I'll say this, to answer your question what its real strengths are, look, it's not hard to do a daily deal site, and this is the real knock on the companies, that anybody can start selling deals. Now, what? Not everyone, however, is as large as Groupon. These guys have a sales force worldwide of roughly 5,000 people who are calling merchants to find deals. What that enables, right, if I have enough deals, you know, they can start experimenting with new businesses. For instance, they have something called Groupon Now in certain markets, which is an app for your phone. So instead of getting a daily deal email in your inbox, you can actually go on your phone and say, you know what, right now I'm interested in eating at a Mexican restaurant nearby. And I can see, is there a deal near me? Because my phone can tell Groupon my location. Is there a deal near me that I can buy right now? In other words, it becomes, you know, I can pull a deal I want as opposed to getting a deal pushed to me that I may not want, like a, you know, manicure, pedicure. I personally am not interested in that and get it all the time. And that's that kind of business model only works if you have big scale, and Groupon has that. The long run, though, the interesting thing is even that might not be a great differentiator because you have rivals like Living Social, which are growing quickly, and even Google, which is now distributing the deals for over a dozen other smaller sites, right? And Google, of course, can reach tons of users, and they're going to distribute other people. So even the Salesforce differentiator, which is a strength of theirs, may over time not be.
And Ralph Winkler, we only have a moment left with you. So I just wanted to ask you, do you see that there's maybe a chance that sites like Groupon or Living Social will become obsolete if merchants could potentially find a way to reach the consumer directly with their deals via an iPhone?
Well, that's a good question. Where is all this going? I mean, the great thing about Groupon, I mean, whatever the value of the stock is, they really have unlocked a new way of for local merchants to advertise. You know, no one uses Yellow Pages anymore. People use Google. But Google isn't great when you're trying to find, you know, the nearest plumber or the near, you know, certain restaurants. I mean, it's not perfect. And Groupon at least helps merchants, you know, market in new ways that they need to do to find clients. And, you know, I think it's really too soon to tell what local commerce is going to look like in the age of the Internet. We're really still in the early stages.
Well, frankly, I'm so sorry, but with that, we're going to have to go to break this one by really quickly. I want to thank you for being on Radio Times. We'll talk more with Nicholas Carlson coming up on the online discounter Groupon. Stay with WHYY. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain, and we'll have more in a second.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art Craft Show supports WHYY and presents its 35th annual show of one-of-a-kind and limited-edition contemporary American crafts. Jewelry, ceramics, glass, furniture, clothing, and more will be on view at the Pennsylvania Convention Center from November 10th through the 13th. 25 artists from Scotland will be featured. The Philadelphia Museum of Art Craft Show from November 10th through the 13th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. Tickets may be purchased at the door. For details, pmacraftshow.org.
From Public Radio International, I'm Ray Suarez. Whether you're eyeballing foreign markets for signs your 401k might take another hit, or wondering when and how the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan might end, what happens beyond America's shores will affect your life over the next 4 years. On the next America Abroad, Election 2012, Voters and Foreign Policy.
tonight at 11 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Bryn Mawr College welcomes to campus Judith Butler, philosopher and gender theorist, for a series of lectures on Monday, November 7th, 14th, and 21st in Goodhart Hall. As the 2011 Mary Flexner Lecturer, Butler will present her latest scholarship, which will serve as the basis of a book to be published by Harvard Press in 2013. While all seats in Goodhart Hall are reserved, standby seating may be available. Also, live simulcasts of the lectures will take place in the college's Thomas Great Hall. Details at brynmawr.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about online discounter Groupon today. The company is now, starting today, trading on the NASDAQ. And joining us is Nicholas Carlson. He's deputy editor for Business Insider and has just published an in-depth investigative report on the company that takes us also deep into the history of Groupon, which is a very interesting part I want to get to. If you want to join the conversation, tell us about your experiences with Groupon deals or other deals from online discounters, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. Also, if you're a business owner and have decided to do a deal like that. Nicholas Carlson, let's start in the beginning a little bit. Give us an idea who Andrew Mason is, who is the CEO of Groupon.
Right. Andrew Mason is still very young. He's in his early 30s right now. A couple years ago, 2006, he was studying public policy at the University of Chicago. He'd gotten a music major at Northwestern, and he was doing some contract work on the side for a web businessman named Eric Lefkofsky. And he was impressing a lot of his colleagues. He was sort of an intern, sort of contract worker, you know, something, whatever you want to call him in that regard. But he impressed some people, and Lefkofsky said to him, look, I'm going to give you $1 million to start a business. And so Andrew Mason did. And he, you know, he's one of these people who wasn't really familiar with the world of business. He later told one reporter, he said, I didn't know people did stuff like this, just gave you $1 million to start a business. So anyway, he started a business, and it was called The Point. And the point of The Point is causes. It is a site that helps people get together and contribute towards causes. And it was a non-profit charity, so to speak. You know, it wasn't a non-profit, actually, but it was for bettering the world. It didn't go very well. And it took about a year in, Eric Lefkofsky said, we got to find a way to make money. And they started experimenting. And one of the things they experimented with was group buying. And it took off like crazy. And it was called Groupon, and that's how Groupon was born.
And how did the culture of the company change as you went from a couple of kids, quote unquote, who wanted to do something good, to a group that quickly became very serious about making money?
Right. It's one of the fascinating things is watching this, you know, just talking to people who were there at the beginning. And, you know, we didn't care that much about money, making money, they would say. You know, one person told me that he worked for Andrew Mason in the beginning because it was clear that this was a person who wasn't so interested in making bags of money. He just really wanted to change the world. So, you know, what happened was they started making money, whether they wanted to or not. You know, they started making a whole lot of it, and that kind of changes things. And you start getting investors who are interested. And Andrew Mason himself, though he's a person who is interested in public policy, and though he started The Point for, you know, to further causes, you know, he is also one of these achievement-focused people. And what one person told me about him was, you know, does he care about the money? It's hard to say. One, you know, does he want to fly in private jets? Probably, sure. But he still wears hoodies and sneakers and things like that. What this person said was, he cares about the money because it validates that he's smart and what he's doing is working. And that's the big point. And so Groupon's culture has changed as well over the years. The company has gone from this place where, you know, kids would come in, and because it was growing so fast, they would be on the sales force, and they would make just tons of money. It's become a place now where salespeople are entry-level employees, and it's sort of, you know, called a boiler room, and it's become a tougher place to work, more of a normal place to work is what I'd say.
We're talking about Groupon and some other online discounters. Our guest is Nicholas Carlson from the Business Insider. He's just published a very interesting, very in-depth article on Groupon. If you want to give us a call in at 1-888-477-9499. Talk a bit about your own experience with these kinds of deals. Would you do it again? Did you have a good experience? experience. Maybe business owners would like to hear from them as well. Now, Nicholas, I want to talk about just how quickly this company grew. And you make a nice kind of chart in your article, because the first year, Groupon's holiday party was in the CEO's apartment. And then the company went to 300 employees, then 5,000, then 10,000. So how did that happen so quickly?
Right. So what happened, we were talking about this in a previous segment, but Groupon's biggest strength, and they realized this early on, is that it was the first mover in the space. So Groupon stumbled onto, really literally basically stumbled onto this business, and it was taking off, and quickly across the country and across the world, really, clones started popping up all over the place. You know, some of them even called themselves Groupon, like one I think in Australia called itself Groupon Australia, even though it had no relationship with the company. So the team gathered and they said, what do we do about this? Do we sue? Do we, you know, do we try to buy these companies? Or do we just grow like crazy and that make have that be our defense? So Groupon grew from Chicago, and then it went into Boston, and went into New York. And as it went from these, you know, cities, they started to develop a game plan. And then one of its investors, his name's Peter Barris, he's from an investment firm called NEA. He came in, and he looked at the numbers, and he said, here's what we have to spend in marketing, and here's how many people we have to hire to add new people. And if we, you know, X plus Y, you know, equals Z, and sort of a light bulb goes off. He's like, you know, there's no reason we can't just take a lot of investment and just spread this thing like crazy. Let's really turn up the jets. And so Barris tells this to Lefkofsky and Mason, Lefkofsky being the chairman and Mason being the CEO. And he tells them, and then Lefkofsky from then on out, you know, just in meetings, is like, let's go. Let's grow this thing. Let's get crazy. Let's just sort of spread it. So they really turned up the jets intentionally and just, you know, hired amazingly overnight, like, you know, base, you know, 10,000 employees. I mean, 3 years later, it's just insane.
And how do you maintain quality when you're growing so quickly? How do you retain control over what exactly is happening when deals are going out under the name Groupon?
Yeah, sometimes you don't. That's a good point. I mean, I think, you know, it's a tired cliche, but the way I think about Groupon is it's a company that, you know, it's like a car being built at 90 miles per hour. Sometimes a handle flies off, you know. So sometimes things have gone wrong. You know, you've heard about deals that were not great deals for merchants, where a merchant would, you know, offer too many customers too good of a deal and really come out on the other side just hurting. And so those kinds of things happened. And now, all along, though, it must be said that Groupon had and Andrew Mason really led this charge, had a really customer-friendly rebate policy, which was that Groupon would refund customers if their service was not acceptable at the vendor. So this actually led to an interesting problem later on for Groupon when it got in trouble with some of its accounting principles when it filed to go public, because it sort of claimed more than it should have as revenues, but all that aside, Groupon had a very customer friendly refund policy, and that sort of helped maintain quality over the quick growth.
But it's not so. You've already hit on this. It's not so friendly for a lot of the merchants, and I've been talking to a lot of merchants in Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia area, who have participated in Groupon deals, and a lot of them have really struggled. What are some of the pitfalls for the people offering the deal?
Yeah, this is an interesting cross section for Groupon. So I think the way to look at Groupon is not as, you know, a coupon's a funny word, because what does it mean? Just sort of a discount that you get on a thing. The best way to think about what Groupon is a new form of advertising for small businesses. So what needs to happen when small businesses look at Groupon is they need to decide on a marketing budget. They need to say, here's how much we can, you know, you always lose money when you spend marketing. If you buy commercials, you don't, you know, that goes away. And so that money goes away. And so they need to look at the money that they're going to lose doing vouchers, which they're going to lose a lot of money, because like we were talking about before, if you're doing a $20, if you sell a voucher for $20 and you're giving $40 of goods away and you only get to keep $10 of that because Groupon gets to keep half of it, you're losing, you know, $30 there, right? So you have to, as a merchant, look at it ahead of time and just do careful math about what is my marketing budget. Now, the fact is that that's a sophisticated that requires a bit of sophistication. And look, small business owners out there are very sophisticated people. It's very hard to run a small business, but Groupon can help these people because it is challenging, and what Groupon can do and it needs to do, and I'm pretty sure they're working on this kind of thing, is they are trying to help small businesses realize how much they can spend and have that be the target for the goal. It's you know, Groupon's very self-interested in this process. Obviously, they want to have great deals for their customers, but you know, they need to be very careful of their reputation because they need to be in this business for a long time, and so they would like to make sure that merchants aren't hurting themselves with these deals.
All right, let's hear. We have Linda on the phone. She is in Lafayette Hill and has a comment on this topic of business owners. Hi, Linda. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
I just wanted to call in. We are a business. We're a salon in the suburbs that has used Groupon and other social online deals, and we found that, I guess the benefit is that it brings new people into the salon. We are able to market to our existing customers, but this did bring a fair amount of new people in, and we were able to see, you know, that the people came back, that we had new clients that were then turned into regular customers.
So it's the best story.
And Linda, were there any pitfalls? Were you at any point overwhelmed with the number of responses you got? Was there any kind of caution or lesson that you can pass on?
Yeah, the very first Groupon that we ran, we were unprepared. We got hundreds of calls. You know, we kept up with them and we did them, but we probably lost, you know, some money doing it, you know, but we have kept some of those clients. In the future, when we've worked with the other companies or Groupon, we've been able to set a limit to the number that we'll take, and then we're also participating in Groupon now, which is great because they're just daily deals, and they kind of fill in where we were slow anyway, and so we're able to kind of, you know, keep up with that a little better, and you know, we're not blocking up time in advance, you know, that a regular customer might have taken anyway.
So you've gotten
the Groupon now is great.
So Linda, as a business owner, you've gotten smarter in terms of how you can use these deals to your advantage in some
way. Exactly. Exactly, yes.
And Nicholas Carlson, thank you so much for your call, Linda. Great to hear from a business owner perspective. Nicholas Carlson, you already said that's kind of what business owners have to do. They have
right.
to figure out how to use these deals. I'm wondering also, does this work better for certain businesses? For example, I spoke to a man who owns a yoga studio in South Philadelphia, Raja Yoga. And he said, well, you know, I'm teaching the class anyway, so whether I have 5 students or 10 students is not that big a deal. But I'm thinking of restaurants. This can get really expensive for them.
That's right. Yeah, restaurants, people with, you know, it works both ways, actually, because restaurants have seating and you know, they have limited supply of things that they can sell. You know, they have goods that spoil. But that also goes back the other way. I mean, Linda was talking about Groupon Now, which is the mobile app that Groupon has, where in an earlier segment, Rolf was talking about this, where it will sort of alert you and tell you, hey, there's a deal nearby where this salon is giving out discounts, and you can go in there, or this restaurant is giving you a great discount at this moment, and you know that restaurant may be facing the end of some of its food supplies, where it's looking at it and says, these things spoil in 2 days, we need to move them, and so they get on Groupon Now, and they cut the prices, you know, for a limited amount of time, and that's really where the future of Groupon is. It's, you know, here's a fancy term for you that I heard from sources, and I'll try to explain it, but it's called, you know, they see Groupon long-term is a yield management platform for small businesses. So what that means is they want to help small businesses sort of manage their inventory, you know, on the fly in real time, the way that you kind of could already on the internet. So it's that's the long-term vision.
So if I'm having a slow day, I can fill in with a Groupon deal if I'm doing well. That kind of thing?
Exactly. That's right. Yep. And if you're a restaurant and you know that Friday nights are fine, you don't need to be selling Groupons to do daily deals that people can redeem at any time, because a lot of people are going to come in and redeem them on a Friday night. And why would you want to do that? You do a great business on Friday night, but maybe with Groupon Now you have it so the deal is only available or visible to users on Wednesday and Tuesday and Thursday, which are just live lousy nights for you. But if you can reel a few people in because it's a great deal, then that's a good time for you to move some product and maybe in the process attract some new customers to your style of cooking. You know, you get them in the door. It's marketing and it's getting rid of some product that's going to spoil.
And Nicholas, it sounds to me that Groupon's future success will in part depend on their ability to be agile and to quickly change in a quickly changing market.
Right.
But can a company of that size do that effectively?
I think Groupon itself is going to have no problem being agile at this point. I mean, you know, yes, it has 10,000 people, but you have to look at who most of these 10,000 people are. It's mostly it's a lot of entry-level salespeople who are really, you know, it's telemarketers. And so it looks like a very big company, but it's not like a Google-sized company which has, you know, 10,000 engineers who are making, you know, big money and have degrees and you know, you put them on a project and you better, you know, make sure that project has some meaning to it. But so the company itself, really, it's an interesting thing. I mean, one of the Groupon's problems is that it looks like such a big company, but really, I mean, they're just sort of staffing up at this point in really important roles. I mean, they've actually had part of my story gets into the difficult time they had hanging on to a COO, a chief operating officer, sort of a number two in at the company. And it's because it's a startup, you know? They still have, you know, when they, here's a good example of how startup-y the place still is. So when they're leading into their IPO, they went out and they had executives and they told a bunch of the employees, all 10,000 of them, you know, you're going to be able to sell your stock on day one of the IPO. Congratulations. This is very exciting for you. And a bunch of these people made financial decisions based on this news. Well, that's preposterous. That never happens. People who underwrite IPOs, the banks, never allow the company's insiders to sell their stock on the day one. And the reason is because they don't want a whole bunch of sellers flooding the market when you're supposed to be having a positive, you know, friendly, buy happy day, the IPO pop. So the underwriters said, you can't tell them that. And so 3 weeks later, they send out an email from the CFO team saying, sorry about that. You actually can't sell your stock on day one. You're going to have to wait 180 days, which I think is May. So if anybody had decided to buy an apartment or buy a car or, you know, pay back some tuition loans or something like that, they were kind of in trouble. So, yeah, this place is there's no malintent with something like that, but it's definitely it's just an indication of they're building this company, like I said before, they're building a car at 90 miles per hour.
Now, we just have about a minute left before we go to break. It sounds kind of like Groupon has to grow up.
Right.
Do you think that has to happen? What's your assessment of its CEO, who's only in his early 30s at this point?
Right. Andrew Mason is an extremely bright and aggressive and intelligent young guy. He's young, you know, and I think that he was sort of not interested in a lot of the stuff that you have to be interested in to be a big-time public CEO earlier on. And from what I get is that he, ever since they turned down, we can get into this later, but they turned down a big acquisition offer last year. And what the impression I get is that around that time he said, okay, I'm in this for the long haul. I'm going to really, really dig in and become that guy. So he's working at it, and people around him say he's doing it, and it'll be, you know, I actually just wonder long-term if his heart's really in it. As we talked about before, this is a guy who started off with not a charity, but a company that was supposed to help the world. Now he's running he's running an advertising company. So
we're going to be right back after a short break. That's the voice of Nicholas Carlson. He is deputy editor for Business Insider and has just published an in-depth investigative report on Groupon, and that's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. More after our break.
Supporting WHYY, the Rehoboth Beach Independent Film Festival, November 9th through 13th, presenting 100 American and international features, shorts, and documentaries, plus seminars and other cultural events. This year, showcasing France. More at RehobothFilm.com.
On the next Fresh Air, physicist Brian Greene explains why some astrophysicists think we live in a multitude of parallel universes. One possibility?
It's like a cosmic bubble bath of universes. Our universe is one bubble in this big cosmic bubble bath.
Greene's book, The Hidden Reality, is out in paperback, and he's hosting a new PBS Nova series. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Peter Bergen produced Osama bin Laden's first television interview. Now he chronicles his last days in a new film. Also, how is the NBA lockout affecting small businesses around the arenas? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY. Ten 10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY, hosting their annual holiday bag event Saturday, November 5th from 10 to 5, with fairly traded oriental rugs made by Bunyad Artisans. Online at rugs.10,000villages.com.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about online discounter Groupon today and this whole industry of online group discounts. Groupon is now trading on the NASDAQ and had a predictably strong opening today. Our guest is Nicholas Carlson. He's deputy editor for Business Insider and has just published an in-depth investigative report on the company. And Nicholas, In your report, you write a lot about the personality of Andrew Mason and his kind of playful side. And what is with the whole company has this silly side to it, the way they write about the deals. It's a bit forced, maybe, but it's supposed to be, not just maybe, but it's supposed to be funny. So why are they trying to portray themselves as this, ha-ha, aren't we funny kind of company?
I love that. I love that you called them on that. They think that's one of the big distinguishing factors of the company, and maybe it is. Maybe it's a big part of their brand that they write these. The daily deals have these. It's comedy, supposedly. Just to get into a little psychoanalysis here, I think that Andrew Mason was someone that wanted, you know, he was a music major. He wanted to get into the performing arts. You know, he's got funny YouTube videos out there, ones of him doing yoga in his underwear in front of a Christmas tree. You know, it's still on YouTube. If you look at his Twitter avatar, which is literally his public face to the world. It's of him in his boxers and a T-shirt opening a Nintendo Wii, looking like a child on Christmas Day. He's just so excited. So I think I think Groupon is infused with his personality, which is this sort of, he wants to, one person said to me, he's found his stage and he's going to take it. So I think that's a lot of what you're seeing with the personality.
But will that lead to him not being taken as seriously as he now wants to be taken? Or is this just the next generation of CEOs? That's what we're looking at coming up.
Yeah, I think you're already seeing them not being taken as seriously as maybe. Look, Groupon had a very troubled, quiet period, and people look at, you know, we earlier in this show we were talking about how some people call it a Ponzi scheme, and you know, I can't help wonder if sometimes that it doesn't have so much negative press around what's been a pretty remarkably fast-growing business, and you know, in a time when the economy is just so terrible, they're hiring 10,000 people. It's great. You know, I wonder if sometimes there's not so much negative press because he seems like he's goofing around all the time.
And I want to hear from people who have done Groupon deals, your experiences. 1-888-477-9499. Again, that number is 1-888-477-9499. Have you had a good experience, a bad experience? What's your take on these companies and where they might be going forward? And now I do want to talk about the whole issue that you just mentioned. All of a sudden, we started reading a lot of bad things about Groupon. And people said, oh, it's a scam. Somebody said it's like giving a toddler a gun. I remember reading the Ponzi scheme kept coming up. Where did all that come from? Let's maybe talk about first some dissatisfied customers and merchants. Was that at the root of it?
Yeah, that's part of it. There were some horror stories of merchants who said, I did a Groupon, and I didn't put a cap on the deal, and all of a sudden my bakery was flooded with customers, and they were all getting half off, and none of them ever came back, and I basically almost went out of business. So that definitely had something to do with it. I think also people are very skeptical of a business that grows this fast, and grows because it's giving you
goods for half off. It seems like it's too good to be true. And then Groupon made some other mistakes, some sort of bad optics, things that contributed to bad optics, I should say, that in each individual case weren't maybe such a bad thing, but then when you sort of pile it all together, it looks bad.
Talk a bit about their accounting and why that came under suspicion. They were doing things a little bit differently.
That's right. So without getting too much into the dirty, the jargon, Groupon was calling its marketing expenses a capital expense. And what that means, and they were saying because their marketing expenses were a capital expense and not a regular normal cost, that they were a profitable company. And, you know, 99% of the businesses out there will look at someone saying that and just laugh, because marketing is considered expense to most people. Now, so that was one sort of just hair on the deal, as they would say. And then the other one was that Groupon was calling, so they would sell a voucher for $40, let's say, and they were saying that all $40 were revenues for Groupon, when in fact, you know, what the SEC ended up asking them to do was say, what portion of your of that voucher, you know, and in the end it would probably be about $20, is that what Groupon keeps? That portion is actually your revenues, Groupon. So these two sort of over-aggressive accounting decisions made Groupon look bad again. Now, I talked to people who, let's just say, you know, we're familiar with the decision making behind including some of those accounting metrics, and their argument is the reason we, you know, so let's go with the vouchers, the revenues one. So they said the reason we count the whole thing as our revenues is because, as we talked about before, Groupon has always had a very customer friendly refund policy, and they said so we're not selling a small discount to a service. We're selling a service. We're selling you a Groupon voucher. So that whole thing, we stand behind it. We stand behind the merchant we've chosen, and we're going to refund it to you. So that's our revenues. Now, in the end, they went with what the SEC wanted, but I understand that they're still calling that revenues internally. They still consider it to be what they did originally. And then with the marketing expense, calling that a capital expense, what they're looking at there is they have a formula for how fast they can grow. And they think that this, you know, I hesitate to use the acronym, but it's something like ACSOI or something like that, a COSI, you know.
OF.
Yeah, right. Anyway, let's not get into that. But they say they still use that metric to determine how fast they can grow, where they can expand. So they're saying they use these metrics. They were just sharing them with the world. But, you know, a lot of outsiders looked at it with suspicion and skepticism.
And is Groupon profitable now, or by anybody's standards, who's not working for Groupon?
Sure, Groupon is not technically profitable right now. It's about break even. They went from losing, by standard accounting, normal people metrics, they went from losing, I think, about $100 million in Q2 to losing about $200,000 in Q3. So that's, I mean, losing $200,000, you know, to you and I, that doesn't sound great, but when you had been losing $100 million a quarter, that's basically breaking even. So they're right there. They're right on the cusp of being a profitable company in normal people speak. I mean, one problem was that when Andrew Mason went on CNBC, you know, a year and a half ago, and, you know, they always ask, you know, are you profitable? Oh, yeah, he says, we've been profitable for a year now. And then the numbers come out, as they always do when you go public, and no, you're not profitable. So that added to the suspicion and the skepticism of Groupon.
We have a call from Belmar, New Jersey. We have Grace on the phone. Hi, Grace, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, my question was, I'm a small business owner. I run an entertainment company, primarily disc jockey and photography. And I see the same kind of deals over and over again on Groupon for salons, for restaurants, and usually for fitness clubs. And it's just repetitive, and I'm hesitant to put my business up there because I don't feel like my business can compete, because we use our business as our rent money every month. So I'm wondering if they have any plans to branch out or assist small business owners with different types of services.
Good question, Grace. Nicholas?
Right, so I'm a little bit confused about what exactly you're looking for. I mean, I think that they would, broadly speaking, I would say that Groupon views itself as a company that needs to get past the daily deal as their primary business. You know, internally they call that G1, and they're already working on G2 and G3. So they view that as version one. So I would say, yes, stay tuned for more types of products. I don't know specifically what kind of thing you're looking for, but I would imagine that, you know, if they see a market there, they'll pursue it. I mean, I'd be curious about what kind of thing you're actually looking for.
Are there certain businesses that are overrepresented or underrepresented? I think the idea I got from Grace was that she just feels like there are not businesses like hers on Groupon, and then maybe that deal will be overlooked, or people are not looking for that kind of deal on Groupon because they are looking for a restaurant coupon.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, I you know, so this is sort of, as a consumer, I get Groupon, and I just get sick of hearing, you know, seeing all the hair removal and salons and restaurants I would never go to over and over again. I'd like to see different kinds of businesses. I've seen them get into the photography business a little bit, dance classes. We talked about the yoga instructor. I think that, you know, so you're doing you're a DJ, and, you know, I mean, that sounds... It doesn't sound quite consumer positioned enough for me. I mean, it sounds like more like a professional service that you do for someone who's planning a wedding. I mean, maybe, you know, do you depend a lot on recurring businesses? I mean, do you depend on someone doing a wedding and then they do their, you know, another party and they get the same DJ?
And then they do their backyard barbecue and then they do their kid's birthday party.
Mm.
And that turns into their son's school dance.
Mm.
That turns into their cousin's bar mitzvah, which turns into 5 years from then, someone else's wedding.
Yeah.
And I my concern is that by associating myself with this, am I going to be labeled as a discounter and seen as, instead of, you know, maybe a Neiman Marcus brand company, more like a Walmart brand company. But at the same time, I am a small business, and this would be a great way for me to reach a lot of people very quickly.
Right, that's an interesting point of view. I mean, I sometimes wonder about the Groupon brand. You know, have you thought of, as a small business owner, do you look at Groupon's brand and see it sort of, you see all these discounts, or do you lump all these discount services, Groupon and Living Social, in the same bucket, or do you see Living Social as having a more premium brand than Groupon? I'm curious what you think about that.
I actually used to think that Living Social was the kid sister to Groupon, but I've actually had a better experience with Living Social companies as a consumer over Groupon companies. I've actually been I've had several pedicures and manicures and been disappointed with the overall result because the company couldn't handle what they were doing.
Hmm. That's interesting.
And Nicholas, this brings up an interesting other issue, though, and I don't know, maybe Groupon is already doing this. Do you think going forward they will try to find out more where a specific customer is in terms of their life? You know, for example, when I started having children, I started getting miraculously all kinds of things from baby formula companies and all this and that. And I'm wondering if Groupon might eventually be able to do that and say, oh, I gather this person is getting married. Let me push these deals to this customer, or is that too sophisticated?
Right. So 2 years ago, we had Andrew Mason into our office back when Groupon was still a very small company. We interviewed him, and we said, Andrew, you know, a couple of guys interviewing him, you know, when is there going to be a Groupon for dudes? You know, when are we going to stop seeing salons and all these things that appeal to a demographic that's not us? And he said that is one of our top priorities. We are developing the technology to personalize Groupon offers based on demographics, location. I mean, obviously, they already do location, but
yes.
Demographics and, you know, past behavior. So that's something they're definitely working on. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know. I definitely haven't seen it yet.
All right. Groupon for dudes. Speaking of dudes, we have Owen joining us from Coppersburg. Hi, Owen. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question actually doesn't have any... it's a nice follow-up to the situation. To what the previous caller was just saying, and my question is, what kind of repeat customers do Groupon see? In the sense that how many people are just following discounts versus how many people are seeing a new product? or are experiencing something new that they become a regular customer.
All right. So how many people are going out because they just want to have a deal and treat themselves to a nice night out? And Nicholas, in my experience talking to business owners, I think that also depends very much on the kind of business.
I'd agree. I think that, so anecdotally, my personal experience is I subscribe to Groupon and I wait till a restaurant that I already know and love offers a discount. And I say, great, and I go and take it, and I eat a cheaper meal at a place where I go all the time. But at the same time, Groupon, if you ask them, they'll tell you that there's a very high return rate amongst people who get Groupons and, go to a restaurant and they come back to it and they go again. Now this is a very important point that Groupon wants to prove to small businesses. And so to do that, they've launched a product called Groupon Rewards so that Groupon customers, subscribers, you and me, the consumer, so that we have some sort of number, an ID, and that when we go to a Groupon business, then we give them our ID, and if we go back to that business over time, we get some sort of reward. It's a lot like you do at the grocery store or with your credit card and whatnot. And the idea is that will help small. Then they can turn around and they say, "Look, this guy came back, four times to your restaurant after using the Groupon the first time." So Groupon's very intent on proving to small businesses that this actually happens.
And I want to summarize. We had a comment from Darlene, but we're coming up on the end of our hour here, and she said she's a fan of Groupon because she gets a lot of services she can never afford, which makes a good point. I mean, the customer still makes out with these deals, right?
The customer makes out, but I talked to a Living Social salesperson, similar business. And his view was you can go broke saving money. So, the customer's making out, for sure. But if you're buying Groupons all the time and going out and spending them, you're still going out a lot.
Yes, the yoga studio owner I spoke to told me that he's in South Philadelphia. He had somebody buy the deal who lived 2 hours away, who's never going to get to his yoga studio.
Uh-uh.
We just have about a minute left, under a minute, Nicholas Carlson. What do you think will happen next with Groupon and sites like Groupon? Where will they go? Do you think individualizing the deals will be the next big thing?
Right. So I think big picture is this. I think Groupon has invented a new form of advertising for small businesses. I think Groupon needs to get to a place where people are walking around and getting spur-of-the-moment deals and incentives to go into local businesses. And they're not there yet. That's where they need to go. They need to get it so people are using Groupon now. I do think that Groupon is run by very smart people. I think they're growing insanely fast, and I think that can lead to trouble that might just be unavoidable. I think that Living Social, which is the number two company, ordinarily it stinks to be number two, but I think because the space is growing so fast, Living Social has a big advantage in that they can sort of watch what Groupon does and learn from all its mistakes.
All right, and with that, we're going to have to go. That was Nicholas Carlson, deputy editor for Business Insider, has just written an in-depth investigative report on Groupon. Thank you so much for being on the show. Radio Times is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, Debbie Bilder. Our engineer has been Kevin Griffin and Al Banks. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Marty Moskowain, and you were listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.